our faith, our religion isn't a philosophy. We believe this and we live this because it's true. It's not just, oh, you believe in that and I believe in this and this is just my subscription of the way I believe afterlife works. This is true. It strikes at the very core of who you are. God created your heart. God created your bodies. God created love. And it's only going to work if you do it God's way. And if you're trying to find love and you're trying to be fulfilled in relationships, it is only going to work if you do it God's way. You can try, and many people have tried to use their sexuality in their own way, try to make their relationship work on their own way, and try to force it, and it never works. So if God designed you, He designed your heart to work a certain way, He designed your sexuality to be a certain way, and when we don't follow it, things break. It's very similar to if we have an automobile and whoever designed the automobile designs the automobile to run on a certain type of fuel. And if you begin to put things in the fuel tank that are not the fuel that was designed for it, it is absolutely not going to work. There is a reason why there's so much divorce. There is a reason why there's so many broken families. And the number one reason for that is sin. It's disorder. It's disordered actions. And they primarily have to do with your sexuality. What it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman. There are core identities that go along with these because they're built into our very bodies. So understanding your sexuality is critically important for understanding your spirituality. And maybe you know people, maybe you have friends who fall in love with somebody and then they get into a relationship. And the moment that they become sexually physical in any way, shape, or form, that's when the relationship begins to focus only on the sex and their entire relationship begins to fall apart and the love breaks apart. And then there's heartache and then there's manipulation. And then there's all of these feelings that go along with that, and it's very disordered. And you might say, why? I really like this person. Where did it go wrong? It went wrong when you stopped following God's plan for you. And the problem is, we're tempted in three ways. We're tempted by the world. Every time you turn on the television, you see sex outside of marriage. On many sitcoms, you see people hooking up, and you never see the consequences of those actions. You never see the heartache. You never see the pregnancy. You never see the abortion. You never see all of the fatherless children. They never show that consequence. So we see that in the world, where sex is treated as something you just do and as an expression of your freedom, even though people who do that are actually enslaved. And we know this from our own experience, some of us. We're tempted from our own flesh. We have concupiscence. We have a disordered desire for sex. We have disordered attractions. Some people think, well, once I become married, these disordered attractions will go away. It's not true. Some people think, and maybe you've experienced this yourself, whenever you're tempted to commit solitary sin, or if you're ever tempted to look at pornography, you think, well, if I just look at it this one time, I'll feel better. And what happens afterwards? You don't feel better. Your heart breaks. You feel guilty inside, and you feel like a slave. On top of that, we are tempted from the devil. The devil, because he hates your humanity, he hates that you're made in the image and likeness of God, he will tempt you through your sexuality. I did not grow up in the Catholic faith. I grew up in the world. In college, I began to understand some of these quotes by Pope John Paul II, and I started to read about his theology of the body. So one quote, for example, at their root, disputes about sexual morality are disputes about the very meaning of life. So to have an argument, to have a question about your sex is really to ask a question about what is the meaning of life. So if somebody asks you, why is sex so important? Why do you Catholics get so hung up on sex? Because at its core, it has to do with what is the meaning of life? If human life is sacred, and I think that most people will agree that human life is special, that we shouldn't go around killing each other, that we should respect each other, that we should have the highest dignity for one another. If that's true, we have to ask why. We would say that we're made in the image and likeness of God. Other people believe it, but they don't want to bring the word God into it. But if it's true that human life is special, that means the sex that makes that human life is special. If I can treat sex like it's just a commodity that I can do for fun and it's not that important, you're making too big of a deal about it. That means I'm saying that human life isn't sacred. There is only one natural way to make children, that is having sex. Children don't just pop out of thin air. If we're all alive here, naturally speaking, now we're getting into perverse scientific experiments, but naturally speaking, babies will not come into this world unless you do the act of baby making. The two go hand in hand. Yes, sex is unitive, but it's also procreative. That's the very essence of what the thing is. Your sexual organs, although they're pleasurable, they're for sexual purposes and reproductive. So at their core, questions about sexual morality are questions about the very meaning of what it means to be a human. Sex is sacred. Human life is sacred. Both have to be respected. When something is very powerful, you have to be careful with it. We have to respect it and we have to understand its boundaries and use it properly because it's also very beautiful. Human life is very beautiful. And so therefore, also sex is very beautiful. Another amazing quote that really has so much depth to it, and we're going to really dive deep into what this means, is John Paul II says, "We cannot understand Christianity if we do not understand the truth and the meaning of our sexuality." What is he talking about? We cannot understand Christianity if we don't understand the truth and the meaning of our sexuality. Sex is so important that we cannot understand who Jesus is. We cannot understand who God the Father is. We cannot understand the Eucharist unless we understand what sex is all about. Wow, that's very important. That's why we saved it for last. We often hear that God is love, and I hate when people say that because a lot of times they mean that God is nice. That's not what we mean when we say that God is love. We saw Jesus many times in the Gospels not being very nice. We also hear that we're made in the image and likeness of God. I have a special dignity inside of my soul. I have a special longing for greatness. That's true. But it also means something else when we say that God is love and I'm made in the image and likeness of God. So first, what does it mean that God is love? In order for there to be true love, you have to have more than one person. You can't just have a person who loves and there's nobody there to receive that love and not only receive that love, but give that love back. So God is a life-giving communion of persons. When I explain this, you have to understand that, remember, God is not physical. This is not a sexual relationship that I'm discussing here. God the Father is pure love. That pure love has to pour itself out onto another person. And that other person has to receive that and reciprocate that. In this case, the person of God the Father loves completely, and the person who receives that is the person of God the Son, the Logos, receives that love, and he gives himself back to God the Father completely without holding anything back. This love is free. It's completely given freely. There's no prerequisite for it. It's total, complete giving of self. There's nothing that I can do that would keep me from giving myself totally. God just, that's his very nature. That's his very essence. It is faithful. You can rely upon this. You can count on this. And it is fruitful. It's life-giving. In fact, it's so life-giving, this eternal exchange of love between the Father and the Son, it's a third person. The love that exists between the two is a third person, and that's the Holy Spirit. This is critically important for you to understand. You cannot understand your entire life unless you grasp this first, who God is. So God the Father is pure love, giving himself completely to God the Son. God the Son is receiving that, completely giving himself back to the Father. And this love that is exchanged is an actual third person, the Holy Spirit. Now, if God was going to take human flesh, that means everything that Jesus did would have to reflect this free, total, faithful, and fruitful love. Jesus gives himself freely on the cross. He gives himself totally. He doesn't hold back his flesh. He doesn't withhold his blood. He even gives his entire heart. His heart is pierced in blood and water. Everything that's left in his heart comes flowing out. It's a complete, total gift of love. It's faithful to the very end. You can always count on the love of Jesus. He's never going to rescind that love from you. And it's fruitful. It gives life. So how else does Jesus give us life? Again, if Jesus is really present in the Eucharist, it's the same thing. It is at the core of who he is to be a complete free gift of self. Anybody can receive Holy Communion, provided that you believe what's actually happening. So it's a free gift. It's a total gift in the Eucharist. He gives himself to you totally, fully, body, blood, soul, and divinity, all whole and entire. He will always be available to you in the Eucharist. And that Eucharistic giving gives you new life. Just as a man and a woman can come together in the sacrament of holy matrimony, the man gives his body completely to the woman receives that love and gives it back completely, and the two become one flesh. That same thing is happening in Holy Communion at a much deeper level. So again, God the Father is the complete gift of self. God the Son receives that gift and gives himself back completely. And this love that exists between the two is a third person. It's a life-giving communion of persons. Again, this is critically important to understand who God is. He is a free, total, faithful, and fruitful gift of love. Divine, truly divine. Now, this is very important. Why? Because this is at the core of who you are. God the Father, when he created Adam, he breathed his spirit into him. That means your soul, the very thing that animates your body, is this image. We have this longing in our hearts to give ourselves completely to another person. We also have this built into our body. So it's not just in my soul that I want to give myself fully to another person. It's also in my body. If you were to look at your own sexual anatomy and the anatomy of a woman, a male anatomy is meant to be given completely to a female. The female's body is built to receive that fully. And your heart longs for that, and that's a good thing. Adam, when he was created, after he received the Spirit of God, he had this desire to give himself fully to another person. And God brought forth all the animals, and Adam named them all. And then afterwards, God created woman out of his side, and what did Adam say? He said, at last, this one is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh, meaning that he sees her. He didn't even talk to her. He just knew that she was different and that he could give his body completely to her and she could give herself back completely to him. No matter what your attractions are, no matter what philosophy you have, it's undeniable that the sexual organs and the sexual anatomy of a male line up with the sexual anatomy of a female. That's undeniable. And guess what happens? Just as God the Father can give himself completely to the Son gives himself back completely to the Father, and that third person is alive, that love is alive, so too the love between a man and a woman brings about new life. So I'm made in the image and likeness of God. It's put into my soul and into my very body. So it's not that God is a sexual creature, but that God made it so that we most powerfully are united to him in the creation of new life when a man gives himself completely to a woman. A woman receives that, not only in the heart, but also in the body, gives herself back, and that is how a child is made. And that happens, and it should happen, when it is free, when it is total, when it is faithful, when it is fruitful. This visualization of the male anatomy and the female anatomy is what we call the nuptial meaning of the body. The human body was meant for one male and one female to give themselves completely to one another at one time, totally, faithfully, freely, and openly, and that's when they most perfectly mirror the Trinity. This is important, very important, because now we have to ask, what is the nature and the meaning of marriage? When you get married, if you get married, this is a very important distinction, if you get married, you go to the altar, one of the first questions that the priest asks, have you come here freely? And hopefully you'll say, yes, I've come here freely without any coercion. Do you promise to be faithful to this person until death? For better or for worse, in sickness and in health, till death do you part, so help you God. So the priest is asking, are you willing to do this freely, totally, faithfully? And he also asks earlier, I kind of skip around, then the words change a little bit. He says, are you open to children and raising them in the church with the teaching of Jesus Christ? So in order to be married, you have to mirror this free, total, faithful, and openness to life. Doesn't mean that you're going to have children. The possibility has to be there. So even if you're infertile, people say, well, I'm infertile. Does that mean I can't get married? No. Doesn't mean that. Are you open to it? Would you welcome children? And if the answer is yes, I come here freely. I'm open to children. I'm willing to raise them in the faith. I promise to be faithful in sickness and in health till death do us part. So help me God. After that, the priest says the words. Okay, husband and wife. But guess what? Those are words and vows, and they're very important. But if I wanted to, at that point, I could still say, change my mind. Change my mind. I was wrong. And I could still get the marriage dissolved. It doesn't become indissolvable. It doesn't become indissoluble until you actually do it. Until a man and a woman, after their vows are made, give their bodies freely, totally, faithfully, and open to life. So it's not until they actually have sexual intercourse that their marriage is now made indissoluble. So that is the nuptial meaning of the body. The sacrament of holy matrimony is ratified, is made indissoluble with the sexual act. That's how important sex is, that it is the sign of the marriage. You say you're married. Okay, then this is what you should do. And every time you have sex, you are renewing your marital vows. Every time you get together with your spouse, you're saying, I give myself to you fully. I give myself to you faithfully, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, uglier or not so ugly, fat or not so fat, balding or not balding, with one tooth or with many teeth. And guess what? You're going to be making these vows, God willing, long into your old age and when you're not even thinking about the other person being sexually attractive. Why? Because sex and is a complete gift of self out of love. It's not just about lust. Our community, our society has taught us that sex is only good if I look at her and she is a supermodel, or I look at him and he's got nice abs and big muscles. It's not the way it works, folks. That's how Hollywood would have it portrayed, but that's not how it works. So the marital union is unitive and procreative. And so too, the sexual act is unitive and procreative. The sexual passions are meant for the sacrament of holy matrimony because that is the safest and best place for children to be born. Children need to be totally balanced to have a good mother and a good father. It's not the norm in society today, but that's because of the way that sex is being treated. And it is to the great detriment of children. Is it possible for a single mother to raise good children? My mom raised me. I was a single child. I didn't meet my father until I was 14 years old. Would it have been better that my father was in my life and that he was a good man? Yeah, that would have been much better for me. And I suffered a lot and I had a lot of heartache because I didn't have that circumstance. It's possible God brings good out of a bad situation, but God had more planned for me. But my family, my mom, my father, did not choose God's way. And so there was a lot of heartache. And I had to overcome insurmountable odds. And no doubt God is still working in people's lives today. So I'm not like saying that you're bad if you have that circumstance, because I'm in that circumstance. So how far is too far is often a question that teenagers want to know. And sometimes they're not given a straight answer. Sometimes I will hear things like, why do you have to ask how far I can get a woman to the edge of the cliff? If you really love her, you're trying to keep her from the edge of the cliff. Yeah, that's true. But I think we all really, really want to know how far is physically too far so that I know if I'm committing a mortal sin or if I'm not committing a mortal sin. Yes or yes, we want to know that. I wanted to know that. And I was looking all over the internet to try and find a clear answer. And finally, I found a clear answer. The answer is the sexual passions are reserved for the sacrament of holy matrimony. That means if I'm enjoying sexual passions, whether that be masturbation alone, whether that be masturbation in a group, whether that be oral sex, anal sex, any type of enjoyment of sexual stimulation, knowingly and willingly, outside of marriage, is a mortal sin. Why? Because my sex is very sacred. Is this difficult? Absolutely. It's very difficult. And honestly, I don't think it can be lived without God's grace. I think many people try to be pure, try to be holy. People get into relationships and you say, I know that in the past, sex ruined my relationship. I am not going to do it. And guess what? They end up doing it because they're weak. They need the grace and the help of God. They need prudence to avoid near occasions of sin. But at the end of the day, they just don't have the willpower. If humans on their own had the willpower to live God's plan, it wouldn't have been necessary for Jesus Christ to come down to give us grace and to save us. But this is important to remember. If this is true, and I think you know it is true because you can feel it in your heart. If this is true, that means it's not only good for me physically, it's also good for me emotionally, it's also good for me psychologically. If this is bad for me spiritually, it's also bad for me physically, it's also bad for me psychologically. So for example, let's say a young man and a young woman are in ninth grade and they become sexually active. First and foremost, they don't even know who they are themselves. They don't have any way of providing for a family. They don't have a proper understanding of what it means to be a man and a woman. And they haven't discerned properly because remember, the sexual act is the sign of marriage. So in a way, although it's true, you're going too far. In a way, you're not going far enough when you have sex before marriage because you're not really giving yourself fully. You're lying with your body. With your body, you're saying, I love you. I give myself to you fully, faithfully, forever. But you don't mean it. You're just doing it because of lust or peer pressure. So what are some of the natural consequences of that? Besides the fact that you might have a child which is a beautiful gift, and God will bring good out of every circumstance. It's not God's plan for you to have children while you're still in high school, but God can bring good out of that, and we must welcome life joyfully. Other consequences would be, in addition to sexually transmitted diseases, but that's not my point here, is that every time that there's sexual activity, there's chemicals in the brain that are released, oxytocin and dopamine. Dopamine makes you feel euphoric. It feels so good. That's that pleasure you get. Oh, wow, sex is so enjoyable. And it's supposed to be. And also oxytocin is released. And that is a hormone, a chemical in the brain that makes you feel addicted, that makes you feel attached. Ideally, if you've not had sex before and you're getting married to a young woman or you're getting married to a young man and you come together in marriage, wow, I love him so much. Wow, I love her so much. And then you get into a little argument and then you have sex. Wow, everything that's wrong with you, I forgive it. Oh, you're so handsome. Oh, you're so beautiful. I would never cheat on you. Oh, you'll never cheat on me. Oh, okay, it's so great. That's great. That's a good thing. But when you're 9th grade or 10th grade and you're having these sexual encounters, now I have this addiction to you. I know they're not good for me. I know they're not going to do good in school. I know they're not going to be good at a good job. I know they're not going to be faithful to me. I know they're not going to be good parents. But I love him so much. Oh, I love her so much. My heart is breaking. You barely know her. The only thing you have in common is you both like chocolate ice cream. You have nothing else in common. She would not make a good mother. I just love her so much. Oxytocin. Sometimes young people, they get addicted to pornography. I can't stop. That's all I think about is the computer and getting on the internet and looking at these girls. I know there's lustful temptation, but then there's also the addiction that comes with it. They've been done studies that addiction to pornography and addiction to sex is worse than alcoholism. It's worse than drug abuse, and it gets at the brain. It's true. There's movements out there of men trying to stop because looking at pornography so often has ruined them. They can't even have regular sex because of looking at artificial sex. And they say, what's wrong with me? Okay, it's not just this, because it's true, it's this. But we would be foolish to think that it's only physical, it's only psychological, it's also spiritual. The devil will get involved and he will help you to make you more addicted because he has access to the memory. He has access to all of those pornographic images you've watched. He has access to the heartstrings. Oh, you'll be alone if you dump this person. Oh, this and this. And all of this will be mixed up. And at the core of this, what happens? Now we live in a culture where people are measured only by their value. So, oh, you no longer have dignity because you no longer have a purpose for me because I do not find you sexually attractive anymore. I can use you and toss you aside. And now we live in a culture that has more human trafficking than we can imagine. There's so much human trafficking. Why? Because these people don't have dignity. Why? Because they're only used for sex. And because sex isn't sacred, their human life isn't sacred. Abortion is so rampant by the millions every single year. Why? One, it starts off because somebody had sex when they shouldn't have, if they're not able to be open to children. And on top of that, now I view their life as worthless because my sex was also worthless. Very important. It all ties together. It does. Is it hard to live? Yes. So the culture says that sex outside of marriage is good. Masturbation is normal. It's natural. It feels good. With masturbation, you can imagine having sex with anybody you want, and that's healthy. What happens is it breaks the soul, it breaks the body, it breaks the mind, and it damages true, authentic love. It's training you in infidelity to your future spouse. So if you're already having sex outside of marriage, when you get married, what makes you think you will stop having sex outside of marriage? If sex isn't sacred before, what makes you think that all of a sudden now it will be more sacred? Again, remember, this is God's plan. God's plan for how you love, God's plan for your sexuality, also God's plan when it comes to having children. Yes, this is difficult. These are life-changing decisions, but that's why hopefully you get married to somebody that you love and that you know very well. Another lie that the culture says is, you must use contraception. It's normal to use artificial contraception. In fact, many high school girls, by the time they're 16 years old, their gynecologists, their doctors, already pushing on them artificial contraception. They're pushing on them birth control pills. They're pushing on them implants that release all these hormones and chemicals inside of their body. They're pushing on them all forms of different sterilization. So in this class, we're only going to focus on artificial hormonal contraception that can come in the form of a birth control pill, that can come in the form of an implant that they put inside the woman's body, and it slowly releases these chemicals over time. What is being released? Artificial estrogen and synthetic progesterone. Why is this important? So we need to briefly look at how does the female fertility system normally, ordinarily work. Every month, so just in case you're not aware, this is the uterus here. This is where the egg is released. These are fallopian tubes. Once a month, an egg will be released. And during this time is what we call high fertility. So a woman is only fertile for certain periods during the month. During that time, this uterine wall fills up with blood inside of here. Also, her cervix becomes soft and it goes up. You might not know what any of these things are. That's okay. Also, the cervical mucus becomes very slippery and very fertile and very hospitable to sperm. And also, a woman's body also begins to change. She begins to give off more pheromones and make her more sexually attractive to you, even though you might always find her attractive. She's more so during these fertile periods. Why? Because during these times, the body, especially once she's a mature woman, is trying to get pregnant. So during that time when an egg is released, there'll be stretchy, fertile mucus, the cervix will be soft, and also this lining will be very thick with blood. The reason being, if sperm goes in, it will can swim freely, meet the egg, and implant itself here in the uterine wall, and a baby is born. So how does artificial contraception work? You have an overload of synthetic estrogen and progesterone, and it tricks the woman's body into thinking that she's pregnant. Therefore, an egg will not be released. Sometimes an egg is released. Another thing that changes is that a woman's cervical mucus becomes very tacky and also very acidic to hopefully, in their case, kill the sperm. But sometimes pregnancy still happens, but then also it causes this uterine wall to be very thin. So if that's the case, there's a new life here that meets and conception happens, it can't implant itself and grow inside of the woman's uterus. Therefore, it causes an abortion. So artificial contraception is also known as an abortifacient. This is very dangerous. Why? Let's think about this. This is the first time, once the prescription of hormonal contraception has come into play, this is the first time where doctors whose purpose is to heal the body, to help people to be healthy, is giving women medication to make their body stop working. A woman is healthy, that means she's fertile. That means everything is working properly in her body. If you're trying to kill that fertility, that life-giving force within her, you're trying to kill that with hormones, it causes problems because it's not natural. Some of the side effects include, but they are not limited to these. So there's decreased sexual desire. Many men are like, I got to get my girl on the pill and I can have sex whenever I want. But guess what? Now she doesn't want to have sex. Okay, that's one practical issue if that's your goal. She'll be likely to have headaches, nausea, be depressed. She'll have mood swings. Many women tend to notice weight gain. They begin to grow hair more or in places that they normally wouldn't. It also acts as an abortifacient. Also, it's very cancerous. So if a woman takes artificial contraception 4 years before her first child, the odds of her getting breast cancer go up by 70%. 4 years, let's say she starts taking artificial contraception as a 16-year-old girl in high school. And let's say she doesn't leave college till she's 21. She doesn't think about having a family till she's 24. That's 8 years later. So 4 years before your first child, your chances of getting breast cancer goes up by 70%. What's happening in case if you're taking it since you're in high school? Way worse. Also, if you're only taking this 1 year before your first child, your chances of getting breast cancer go up by 40%. So people are wondering, why is there so much breast cancer? Well, maybe it has to do with the drugs that you're putting into your body. Also, the odds of getting cervical cancer go up, the odds of stroke go up, heart attack go up. There's been many cases where young, healthy women, you know, athletes, they're getting strokes and heart attacks and they're getting blood clots and they're like, why? Well, it just happened to be right after they got the implant of all these hormones inside of their body. Also, the divorce rate goes up by 50%. Again, because now my relationship is based on sex. Again, I said earlier that it's very important to discern who you're going to get married to very carefully. Because sometimes if your relationship is based on sex, and then you get married, and what happens is naturally you get used to this person over time, and your relationship is no longer based on sex, and you find out that you don't have that much in common after all. and you're trying to make it work. But now the husband has the habit of using his wife only for pleasure, and now the pleasure is not so much there anymore, and then the divorce rate is up 50%. Also, why infidelity? Because now the woman can cheat. Not that's going to make her, but now how is the husband going to know if he goes to work and she goes somewhere else? Because now she has no fear of getting pregnant. Wow. Again, I mentioned the husband will begin to treat you like an object. Also, I've known many people who've taken artificial contraception and now they struggle with permanent infertility because this is messed up with their fertility cycle. They take these drugs and all of a sudden now they can't get pregnant. And it's because they were messing with this to begin with. Also, it has issues with children. What do I mean? So these hormones are very strong. There's a reason why in the insert it says, do not take this within 6 months of having a child. Why? Because these are very powerful drugs, powerful enough to lead women to have greater chance of breast cancer. And so when you have this as an infant or you're inside of the womb and you're having these drugs, maybe the mom is still taking these drugs. She doesn't even know she's pregnant because pregnancy does happen. It's not that effective. It's like 96-something% effective, depending on which kind of drug you take. And now there's an overload of these synthetic hormones. And so now women, the little girls will be going through puberty much earlier. Boys will have less sperm. There's an increase in prostate cancer in young men. In fact, there's so much of this drug being used that people are now concerned that it's in the water cycle. So all of these young girls are being given synthetic estrogen and synthetic hormones, and then they go to the bathroom and then they pee, and then that water goes through to the plants to get cleaned out. And they're saying that now it even impacts people who aren't taking it. So I'd be very careful about all of these drugs. So God's plan is the best plan. The pill and artificial contraception is poison for the body. It's poison for the soul because it's intrinsically disordered. It's poison for the relationship. It's poison. And we have to understand that God's ways are the best ways. It is not God's will that a woman get pregnant every single time that she has sex. If it was God's will, she'd be fertile all the time. It's not God's will. I told you earlier that only one time a month is there this window of fertility. And there are natural ways of figuring when a woman is fertile and when she is not fertile. But you have to use prudence. It does require a little bit more self-discipline. So there might be good reasons to avoid pregnancy. And so when it is necessary to space children, that's called natural family planning. And you might say, well, that's just like contraception. No, it's not. Because I'm not putting anything in my body to stop God's plan. I am simply taking advantage of the fertile and the infertile times. So before I explain to you basically how it works, I'm not going to get into the real nitty-gritty of it. The divorce rate of those who use natural family planning is 2%. So now instead of talking 1 in 2 people are getting divorced, now we're talking 2 in 100, depending on the mentality. In an ideal circumstance, both the husband and the wife want this. Both the husband and the wife are keeping track of this and appreciate their sexuality. It's 99.6% effective. Men and women become more aware of the body. Also, you can see signs of early infertility because you're tracking a woman's fertility. Also, it has no negative consequences. It doesn't lead to cancer. It doesn't lead to cervical cancer. It doesn't lead to stroke. It doesn't lead to any of these physical ailments that introducing these foreign hormones in overloading quantities would have. And also you can stop it at any moment and it's not going to leave you infertile. So basically, I'm going to give you the basics of how it works. Just basically, I don't expect you to know this. If you get married and you get married in the Catholic Church, thank goodness we live in a good diocese where the cardinal requires everybody to take marriage prep. And part of that marriage preparation is some sort of fertility awareness program. So what happens again? There's a surge in this luteinizing hormone. It's not on this chart. That's called an LH surge. An egg is released. Also, there is an increase in natural progesterone. Very important to notice. So at that time, the cervical mucus becomes mucousy and stretchy and slippery. It makes it easier for sperm to travel, a sign of fertility being stretchy cervical mucus. The cervix is high and soft. Also, what else? The body temperature goes up. So a woman can chart this. She can take her temperature every morning and notice, this was a chart, pretend like that one doesn't exist, I have a low temperature, and I'm taking my temperature every morning. A woman will notice that her temperature rises. This is called the symptothermal method. I'm measuring the temperature. I'm measuring the mucus. I'm measuring the cervix. Also, I said earlier, there's also a luteinizing hormone. This hormone, because of modern technology can be measured with your urine. So I know some people who are using natural family planning for a good purpose, and they pee on a special device, pee on a little stick, and then the stick says, in the little device it says H for high chance of fertility, P for peak day. If you're seeking to have children, wow, peak day is the day that you want to have sexual intercourse, because this is the day that you are most ripe to get pregnant. Or then it goes from peak to high, so it goes high fertility, peak day, high fertility. Why? Because if you have sex a couple of days before peak day, around in here, you can still get pregnant because the sperm are living inside of the woman. After peak day, that's like the peak time of fertility, you can still get pregnant for a day or two after, because the egg is being released and sperm go in. Next thing you know, you're pregnant. So with devices such as Clear Blue, I think it's called the Clear Blue Monitor, you can also measure the luteinizing hormone. So there's very many ways. And this would mean that if you are trying to get pregnant, you would have sex on high fertility days, peak days, and the other high fertility days. And that would be the best time to get pregnant. That's why I said it's good for those who are seeking to avoid pregnancy for some just reason, and it's also good for those who are trying to avoid. So if you're trying to avoid, you would avoid having sex on high fertility days, peak days, and the following two or three high fertility days, depending on how dire your circumstance was. But again, we have to remember that children are a blessing. Children are not a curse. The greatest joy that I have in my life is my children. The one thing that always consistently brings me joy is my children, because they are part of my relationship with God. God chose to bless my family with the participation in the life of the Trinity. It's such an amazing blessing. Can children be horrible? Yeah, sometimes, because they have free will. And a lot of times that coincides with horrible parents and brokenness and abuse. But they can also be very beautiful. They're carrying on our life's work, our life's mission. So we should never view children as a burden. You might meet somebody who has a child, even in high school. You say, thank God for that. Praise the Lord that God can bring good out of your sin. Every human life is sacred. Every human life is beautiful. And I love my children. I love them. They bring me the greatest joy. Another lie that the culture tells is about divorce. This is very important. People will say, the church is so rigid. Let's see what Jesus has to say. Again, remember, the sacraments are not the idea of the church. They are instituted by Jesus Christ, and we do them because they are His, not because they are ours to manipulate. So what does Jesus say? Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any cause whatever? Jesus says in reply, have you not read that from the beginning, the Creator made them male and female, and said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but are one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, no human being must separate. Let me repeat that. What God has joined together, no human being must separate. I say to you, whoever, this is important, divorces his wife, this is important, unless the marriage is unlawful, and marries another, commits adultery. Why did I say that was important? There's a rare circumstance here. Unless the marriage is unlawful. So there's a difference between divorce and an unlawful marriage. Why? So in order to be married, at the hour of and the moment of the vows, did you come here freely? Well, if you didn't come here freely, that marriage is unlawful, because you're being forced, you're being coerced. Was it total? Did you plan on this being until death? If you have a prenuptial agreement saying, well, if we get divorced, I'm going to keep the car and you're going to keep the house, well, that means it wasn't total. You're already planning on separating. That means your marriage is unlawful. Were you faithful at the hour of your marriage? Were you cheating on my future spouse here? Did you have somebody on the side? If so, then it's unlawful, because you weren't being faithful and you had no intention of being faithful. Are you open to life? So did you say in your mind, I'm not going to have children. I'm going to use contraception. I don't want any kids. I'm not open to life. Well, then your marriage is unlawful. So if it's not free, there's many reasons here. There's many ways. There's many ways here that you could argue that your marriage was invalid. And if that's the case, then you can go before a tribunal of the church, present your evidence. They will do some research and they will say, yes, you're right. This marriage is null. This marriage is void. And we call that nullity, an annulment. So maybe you have parents who are divorced. They're married and they're divorced. Maybe they should go back and look at the circumstances before their marriage and get an annulment before the church. And then that would free them to be married. Now, let me be very clear. Once you are married, you are married. So let's say you did this freely. You did this totally, faithfully, fruitful. You had every intention of being married till death. And then your husband, after the fact, becomes an alcoholic. Or your wife, after the fact, cheats on you. Was it a lawful marriage? Yes, it was. Did you promise in sickness and in health, for better or for worse, till death do you part? Yeah, I did. Okay, well, this is worse. Till death do you part. And it might be a cheater, it might be an alcoholic, but that's still your husband, that's still your wife. And so that's a horrible circumstance, and we need to pray, and we need to talk to them and have an intervention and see what we can do, but you're still married. That's why it's so important that you know who it is that you're getting married to, that you discern properly, that you save sex for marriage, if they're worth saving it for. And you have to spend time with these people to see how they act in various circumstances. It's the easy thing. The easiest thing to do is say, I'm attracted to that person. I will get into a physical relationship with that person. And I love that person. Love is not emotions. Love is not attractions. Love is a choice. When all the attraction is gone, all there is left is love. The choice to want the highest and the best thing is an act of the will. A parent who adopts a child, they've never met the child before. They make a choice. I'm going to love this person. What does that mean? I want the highest and the best thing for them. When Jesus was on the cross, was that pleasurable? Was that joyful? No, but it was the ultimate expression of love, sacrificing of himself for the sake of the beloved. So what about the circumstance if the husband is being physically abusive? If the husband is being physically abusive, punching the wife, being really dangerous to the children, in that case, the spouses may separate, but they're still married. And God willing, with counseling and with conversion and with prayer, God willing, they will be able to reconcile. But for the safety of the family, they must separate. Jesus himself made these rules. These are the words of Jesus Christ. So it's very important that we discern very carefully who we get married to. And I'll talk to you about that in a moment. Now we must discuss attraction. I mentioned at the very beginning of class, your attraction does not go away once you're married. Just as your desire for sex doesn't go away after you look at pornography or you commit masturbation or you have sex with whoever it is that you're attracted to, we have to be clear. We control our actions, but we can't control who we are attracted to. I hope you're realizing we're making rational decisions here. We're not basing our decisions only on emotions, only on attractions. Are attractions helpful? Yes. If I can find somebody to marry that I'm very sexually attracted to, that'd be great. That'd be awesome, especially if you can control that and save your sex until marriage. But once you get married, you're going to be attracted to other people. And you're going to have to make a choice. How do I act on these attractions? If you have the habit of being in control, then you will continue with that habit. And God willing, with his grace, you'll be faithful until death. A man might like dark-skinned women. He might like thicker women. Some men might like really skinny women. Some women might like Asian men. Some women might like dark-skinned men. Some women might be attracted to women. Some men might be attracted to men. Your attractions do not define who you are. You are a child of God. All too often in our culture, people will say, well, I have an attraction to somebody of the same sex. Therefore, I must be gay. Or I must be a lesbian. Or I am attracted to everybody and everything. I am bisexual. You are not your attraction. Every human being is the same in that we all have sexual attractions. We cannot control who we are attracted to, but we can control what we do with that. Is it good for men to have sex with animals? No. Is it good for men to have sex with children? No. Is it good for men to have sex with people who are not their spouses? No. And I have to control those attractions. Similarly, it might be that you are attracted to somebody of the same sex. It does not mean that it is good for you to have sexual intercourse with somebody of the same sex. It's difficult, yes. It's difficult. It's a tougher life. And we have to be very sympathetic to people who have same-sex attraction. And it's not personal either, but two people of the same sex can never be married. Why? Because what is marriage? Think about it. It's a total, free, fruitful gift of self. The sexual organs only work one way. It's only possible between a man and a woman in order to give themselves freely, totally, and open a new life. The sexual act of the male and the female organs is a sacred and special act that cannot be replicated in any other circumstance. And that's what marriage is. Without that, there's no marriage possible. For example, even if a woman were to fall in love with a man and he have his, for some reason, because Jesus even said that there are eunuchs, eunuchs being those who can't have sex, for some reason he doesn't have the sexual organs or his sexual organs do not work, he's permanently impotent, they can't be married. Why? Because they can't commit the sexual act. They can't make the words into flesh. So we have to be sympathetic. Is it possible for somebody who has same-sex attraction to get married to somebody of the opposite sex and have sex with them? Yes, absolutely. Is it possible for a man who's attracted to hot blondes to get married to a thick Hispanic woman? Yes, it is possible. It is possible. Is it possible for him to have sex with her? Yes, it is possible. We might have sexual preferences, but people have sex all the time with people that they're not attracted to. Many of you, when you get married, you're going to have sex with a spouse who you no longer find sexually attractive. It happens all the time because sex is more than attraction. Sex is an act of love, and it's a beautiful thing. But we should not act only on our attractions. They can be good, they can be bad. I know men who are married to opposite sex, and they send me messages on YouTube, and they say, man, Gabe, you're right. It's true. Who we are sexually attracted to isn't necessarily always good for us. And I was like, what are you talking about? Well, I am married to a woman, and I have 3 children, but I am addicted to looking at gay porn, and I have a strong desire to go have sex with men. And thanks to prayer and to discernment and to freedom in Jesus Christ, I am choosing to stay with my wife and choosing to be a good husband for her and to love her and to cherish her and to raise my children to be good and holy people. We can't just act on our attractions. It's just not good for us. We have concupiscence. There's a famous saying of a monk who is helping a younger monk, and he asks the old monk, monk, I'm so overcome with lust. When can I stop being on guard? When can I stop worrying about committing sin? And the monk said, 10 years after you're dead, you won't have this temptation anymore. God created us to give ourselves fully to another person. And because of the sin of Adam and Eve, because of concupiscence, we have disordered desires. But again, you're not your attraction. So a reminder, the human body is made in the image and likeness of God. The human soul is made in the image and likeness of God. And two people who give themselves to each other freely, totally, faithfully, forever. That's what God wants. God wants you to give yourself totally, fully, freely, not holding back. It's in your very DNA. You desire this. In fact, I meet young men who tell me, Mr. Gabe, I feel like God's calling me to be a priest, but I want to have children. I want to have sex. I want to be able to give myself totally to another person. And I say, good. That means you're normal. Just because you become a priest does not mean that your sexual desire goes away. But I want children, Mr. Gabe. You will have children. You'll have so many children. Everybody you walk by will call you father. Your bride will be the church, and you'll give yourself totally, freely. You lay down your life. A priest puts his head on the ground, gives his whole body to the church. Freely. Why? For new life, so that other people can live. And it's not natural. It's not natural to be a priest. It goes against our nature. But in a way, it fulfills the nature. Because our marriage is only a sign of what's going to happen in heaven. In heaven, it's going to be you and God, fully, totally united, just like in Holy Communion. And a priest is a sign. When we see him wearing his black cassock, it's a sign the black means he's dead. He's single. Why? Because there is a spouse for all of us waiting in the next life. Is it difficult? Yes. But in the Eucharist, he gives himself back to us, and he fulfills us, and he gives us grace, and he gives us strength. And so we're all called to chastity. We're all called to sanctity. We're all called to purity. The only time you can have sex is in the sacrament of holy matrimony. Whether you're priest, whether you're gay, whether you're straight, whether you're bi, sex is sacred and it has to be respected within a very narrow set of bounds. And it's that set of bounds which mirrors the Holy Trinity. So sex is sacred and sex is special. And the reality is most people are confused. The majority of people are broken. I've not met a single person who has not been broken because of our pornified culture. Even people who come from good families are exposed to pornography, are dealing and struggling with their sexuality, with their purity. Nobody is alone in this. But just because you struggle, that's not who you are. You're a child of God, and never forget that. Never say, I'm too addicted to pornography. I'm too addicted to this. I'm too addicted to that. I just quit. Because when you quit, you lose. When you quit, you turn your heart away from God, and then you become vicious. All right, picking a good spouse so that we can come at this a little bit rationally. Attraction does play a role, but again, attraction can be dangerous because we're only going off our passions. So we need to come up with a list of things that we would consider non-negotiable when you're looking for a good spouse. First and foremost, I recommend that you don't date until 2 years before you're ready to get married. Yeah, I know it's difficult. Why though? Because what's going to happen? You're going to make a lot of mistakes. Maybe 1 in 100 people meet their future, the person of their dreams in high school. Very rare. Most people meet other broken young people in high school, do things sexually, and then they regret it. And if they get married, they realize later that they were immature and they didn't know what they were doing, and then they get divorced, and then they break a bond between God and a sacred covenant that's supposed to happen. So I encourage you to wait 2 years before you're ready to get married. Why? So that you can come at this clear-headed, so that you can come at this and you can be at the right place in your life. You can already know what your job is going to be. You can already know how you're going to provide. And then you can be the picker. I will give you an analogy of my own life. I made many mistakes. Then when I realized all of this beauty and truth of God, I said, I don't need to be in any relationships because I'm not ready to get married. I'm not ready to have sex. I'm not ready for any of this. And then once I had that clarity in my mind, I was able to make a list. Who's good as a good spouse? Well, somebody who could enter into the marriage sacramentally, meaning that somebody who is willing to give themselves freely to me, somebody who does not believe in divorce, somebody who believes that this is until death, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, somebody who's open to life, somebody who's willing to live the sexual teachings of the church. If they're not willing to do those things, cross them off the list. You're wasting your time. I don't care how attractive they are. Move on to the next person. Another end of marriage is the sanctity of the spouses. That means when you get married, it is your responsibility to get your wife to heaven. If you're a woman, it is your responsibility to get your husband to heaven. Goal number two is to get those children to heaven. If the person you are considering marrying or discerning marriage or dating, if they don't have those qualities, okay, you're beautiful, you're attractive, you're very sweet, you're very nice, you might cook good meatloaf, but guess what? More important than meatloaf is going to heaven. Heaven is forever. Hell is forever. Marriage is only until death. If I were you, this is what I did. I made a list of non-negotiables. That's the first question I asked. Are they willing to live the sexual teachings of the church? No? Okay, I'll never see you again because I need help living the sexual teachings of the church because I am weak. I can't be trying to live purity alone. I can't have somebody who's going to be taking artificial contraception because then my marriage is going to be invalid. Well, where do I meet these people? You meet them where good people hang out. You're not going to meet a holy girl in a nightclub or at a bar drinking alcohol. That's not where you're going to meet a good woman. You're going to meet a good woman at church. You're going to meet a good woman in the school library. So I made a list of non-negotiables, and I would see women at church afterwards. I'd be like, hey, can I get your number? And they'd be like, no. I was like, all right, see ya. Hey, want to get coffee and have a conversation? Coffee conversation with every girl that I was even semi-attracted to. We'd get coffee. I'd start asking her questions. I had my list. So how do you feel about contraception? Oh, I think it's cool. Oh, don't you know that it causes this, it causes that, causes that? Yeah, I don't care. All right, well, nice meeting you. See ya. Hey, how's it going? How do you feel about artificial contraception? What are your goals in life? What do you want people to say about you when you're dead? How many children do you want? What do you want to work? How do you feel about being poor? Because I knew I was going to be poor. And then when you find somebody who has these qualities, these core values that you share, then you can be like, all right, let's get together again. Okay, I like you. Want to get together again? We are discerning. Have a list of things. When you see somebody you like, ask them out. Ask out a lot of people. When you're ready, I have here Catholic, same core values. Why? Because again, your faith is not a philosophy. Your faith is the truth. It's at the heart of who you are. So if you can find somebody who has all of the same core values, your life will be a million times easier. You believe that when you commit a sin, you go to confession and God forgives you. So if you have a spouse that also believes that, who goes to confession regularly, your relationship would be much better. If you believe that Jesus is really present in the Eucharist and she believes that, that means that if that's at the core of who you are, and it should be because that's what you were made for, that means you share the core values, core beliefs. You know how this other person thinks. In a given circumstance, you know what tempts them, what strengthens them, and that makes your relationship 100 times better. Now, I will be honest. When I first met my wife, I had asked her out on one of these little coffee dates, and she wasn't Catholic. But she was open to the truth, and I made it very clear to her, I am not marrying a non-Catholic. And she was a Baptist, but then I asked her a lot of questions. And she was a very good Baptist, very good Baptist. And she found that being Baptist wasn't fulfilling and that she was searching for the truth. And she knew that the truth was out there somewhere. So I was like, wow, so you're willing to change your life for the truth no matter what it is? She's like, absolutely. I was like, so if the Catholic Church was true, you would change your life to become a Catholic? She said, absolutely. And I was like, how do you feel about being poor? She said, I don't need money. Well, do you want to learn about Catholicism? She said, yes. I said, all right, well, we'll talk about it. I gave her some books about the Eucharist. We don't flirt to convert, but if they're open to the truth, and it could be God's will that you help bring somebody into the church. But again, you have to be upfront from the beginning. I want to live purity. I want to live chastity. I'm only going to marry a Catholic if we have the same core beliefs. If you believe these things and we get married, great. If you decide that you don't, very good, move on. Because the statistics show that when both parents live the Catholic faith and the man takes charge, the odds of the children becoming faithful Catholics are very high. But when only one parent, especially when it's only the mother, the odds of the children becoming very, very faithful is like 10%. So already you're failing in that responsibility of getting your children to heaven. Where else can you find them? I recommend, especially when you get older, finding a spouse on the internet. I have several friends who have met their spouse on the internet. And I saw your eyes got really big, like, whoa, what are you, crazy? Why? Again, your goal is to find somebody who has the same core values as you, and they might not live in Houston. So if they live in New York City, or they live in California, or they live in Wisconsin or Louisiana, how are you going to find them? You're just going to take a trip over there in an airplane? No. You make a profile. You say, this is what I want. If you don't like these qualities, see ya. Keep moving. And maybe you'll find somebody that you're attracted to who shares all of these core values. And then you begin to talk. And then you say, you know what? I like you. Maybe we should meet. It becomes more practical. When you get into this relationship, it's very important that you talk about purity, that you guard and protect one another's purity. It is impossible to have one person who wants sex from the other person and the other person having to be the guard. No, we can't do this. Oh, no, don't touch me. You want somebody who's going to fight with you and fight for you. It's important that you talk about deep things up front, that you pray together, you pray for each other. A lot of times, especially women, they'll think, well, maybe they'll convert when they get older, when we get married. You can't count on that. And spending time together talking about these deep things will help you to know who it is that you're marrying. You know what causes them to tick. You know what they thrive on. And you can have a better sense of an assurance that they're not going to cheat on you. They're not going to flip and become a psycho on you unless they like hit their head or something. But if you know that they rely upon the Lord, they really eat, sleep, and breathe the teachings of the church, that they're cared primarily about their salvation, meaning that they're going to take care of your salvation. Go to church together, pray the rosary. Our Lady will help you in every aspect of this. Many people often question, why is Gabriel always talking about the rosary? Because Our Lady wants you to have a happy and holy life. Our Lady wants you to have a beautiful spouse. Our Lady wants you to be pure. And by praying the rosary together, Mary will help to make it clear if this is the right person for you. If you're struggling with sexual addiction and looking at women as objects, then Mary will help you to see the true dignity, the true beauty of woman. If you're a woman and you're struggling with being too immodest, Our Lady will remind you of the true dignity and the true beauty of woman. I also encourage you to have a great devotion to Saint Joseph, especially young men, so that we can be strong male role models. And finally, God created love. God created love. We can fight, we can resist, we can push back, but without God, good luck. You're not going to be happy. I'm not here as your philosophy teacher. I am here as a witness that God is the only thing that can satisfy the longings of your heart. If it wasn't true, I wouldn't be here telling you these things. Let's close in prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Dear Lord, you created our hearts, and we all have a longing in our heart that can only be satisfied by you. We ask that you give us the grace and the strength to overcome our temptations, to overcome our desire to give in to cheap love. And if we fall into sin, we ask you to please help make us pure. Please strengthen us and heal all of our wounds and all of our disordered attractions. Through the powerful intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary, we place all of our hope and all of our trust. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. God bless you.